Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Poor, and my guest today is Robert Maripol. And Robert is going to talk about the movie Being the Ricardos, because I had seen it a few weeks ago, and I believe the time frame was 1953. And that was a horrible year for Robert and his brother. So can you share your thoughts about the movie?
Yeah, I do want to just make it clear at first that 1953 was a horrible year for me and my brother, because I was 6 years old then, and my brother was 10, and our parents, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, were executed by the U.S. government on June 19th, 1953. So, and that was at the height of the McCarthy period. And of course, the film, which is set in 1953, deals with issues that were front and center during the McCarthy period. The film is Being the Ricardos is really about the I Love Lucy television show and what happened during a week of recording, which were a number of things. And what I've learned from was that the issues were kind of all compressed together into one week for dramatic impact. They didn't really happen that way, but those issues all did happen. And I think that's a legitimate use of dramatization. What I think is an illegitimate use of dramatization, and something I think, Cynthia, that is sort of a complicated issue to address, and that is, at what point does the script writer's change of history switch from being dramatic license and moves into real distortion and actually becomes dishonest, and you could really say the film lies? And I think the unfortunate thing about this film and Aaron Sorkin's role in it is he's actually a liar. And I don't think people, when they see films like this, which are purported to be dramatizations, are really sufficiently critical of that kind of issue.
Okay. So from the very beginning of the film, did you have a bad feeling about it?
Well, no, I didn't really have a bad feeling about it at the beginning so much, because I really didn't know where it was going. I knew from watching the trial of the Chicago 8 which I was very familiar with because I was friends with the defense attorneys and I knew people who were on trial, that he really distorted things in ways that I think were historical lies, in order to promote what I see as Sorkin's sort of corporate liberal democratic agenda. In this film, I didn't. I was skeptical. But the film, it's a mixed bag. First of all, Sorkin is a very good scriptwriter, and so you have very clever dialogue. And it's well acted and well filmed, and so the production values are terrific. And there are some issues, particularly identity politics issues, the issues around Hollywood's misogyny, which are handled quite well. And I think, I don't know the exact details of what went on behind the scene in the filming of TV shows in the early 1950s, but I would accept that there are a reasonably accurate portrayal of what went on. But when he starts talking about communism, the big which is the big central theme, that Lucy is accused of being a communist, and the Lucy show, I Love Lucy, is being watched by 60 million Americans every week. It is, you know, it is astoundingly influential, and all of a sudden the whole show is threatened by McCarthyism. And how are Lucy and Desi going to deal with this? And, you know, what the show comes out promoting is that McCarthyism is bad because people who weren't communists were accused of being communists. Now, where does that fit? What that says is that whatever happened to real communists during the McCarthy period was just fine and dandy. There's nothing wrong with going after real communists, including Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, I suppose. So I guess I have somewhat of a personal axe to grind there, even though my parents are not mentioned in the show. But when I've talked about distortion and lying, Cynthia, and I would like to give you an example of what I mean. And that is one of Desi, who's a Cuban, who comes from Cuba, is portrayed as, you know, okay, how can I be a communist? You know, the communists destroyed my family in Cuba. And he tells this story about his father, who was the mayor of Cuba's second largest city, Santiago de Cuba, and who was ousted by soldiers who then went and attacked their family farm and killed all their animals, and we had to flee. And I'm scratching my head because this is all being portrayed as he being an anti-communist, anti-Castro Cuban. But in 1953, Batista was the one who ran Cuba. Batista was the one who controlled the army. And Desi is talking about things that happened even earlier. And so it turns out that it wasn't Fidel's troops. It wasn't the Cuban revolutionaries who attacked Desi Arnaz's family. It was Batista who deposed his father, whose troops terrorized their family. And this is this complete distortion and turning on its head of historical facts is it's a lie. It's a straight out lie, and he gets away with it. And I find that despicable, frankly.
Two questions. How many people picked up on the fact that the timeline was distorted?
I don't know. I've seen reviews which talk about how they compressed everything into 1 week, but I haven't, except for a few left, critiques that are, don't get widely circulated. There didn't seem to be any discussion of the fact that the way Cuba was portrayed was something totally divorced from reality. And also, another thing that I think, so there's, as far as I know, within the mainstream, there really is no understanding of that at all. And the result is that if you look at the McCarthy, if you look at the film, you really have no understanding of what went on in Cuba, and you have no real understanding of the McCarthy period either. You know that all sorts of people were under threat, you really, why and by whom and who benefited from it and what was the whole purpose of it all? Why was there such a big move to go after Hollywood in the early 1950s? Why were people who famously became known as the Hollywood 10, people who were forced to give testimony before the House Un-American Activities Committee, and refused to do so and ended up in prison. And these were famous Hollywood writers who, you know, and then they all got blacklisted. And they couldn't produce, you know, they couldn't do any work. They couldn't, all of this stuff was going on. And Sorkin was basically wrote a film, a screenplay that said, well, that's fine. As long as, you know, the only thing that would be bad is if they weren't really communists. And so you don't have any understanding at all of what the McCarthy period was really about. And also why it really was, why they focused on Hollywood. And that's pretty important to understand politically.
Let me ask you this question. Do you think he wrote it from the perspective that this would go over people's heads? They wouldn't really understand all the facts.
You know, I don't know. I when I think of his perspective, I find myself going back to the Chicago 8 trial, in which I saw the major distortion was that, you know, the people who were charged in that trial were demonstrating not at the Republican National Convention, but at the Democratic National Convention.
Right.
That the people who were beaten there were beaten by a Democratic mayor's police, not by Republican police. But what he did was finesse the trial, which took place a couple of years late, that took place later while Nixon was in office, and made it look like the demonstrators were really protesting against the Republicans. They weren't protesting against Hubert Humphrey, the liberal Democrat. They were protesting against the Republicans. All of that got distorted. And the main purpose of this is, I think, Sorkin, who is a big supporter of corporate Democrats in this modern day and age, is out to support the direct progeny of Hubert Humphrey, that is Joe Biden, and his politics, and liberal Democrats, at the expense of the right wing. And so once again, in this film about Lucy, you find the political undertone being, you know, liberals are right winger, McCarthyites and Trumpites are bad, and so are communists. But the true liberals, they're the real heroes. And one of the things that we have politically today is, you know, Biden and folks represent the rule of law and represent an independent FBI and an independent CIA and support for our intelligence agencies who are now investigating the Trumpies, okay? And so what happens in this film is one of the worst people politically in the entire spectrum of the McCarthy period, J. Edgar Hoover, is presented as a hero. And that's part and parcel of, you know, liberal Democrats boosting the FBI as our protectors. And I think while it is, it's a complex process. I think, you know, America in some ways survived the Trump coup because Trump attacked the intelligence apparatus in this country, the intelligence establishment, and the military establishment, and they struck back against him and you know, sided with the Democrats. And that's where Sorkin is coming down. So I think that in some ways Lucy was presented not so much because he thought all these details that I talked about from the 1950s would go over people's heads, but more because he was promoting an idea of a security agency protecting democracy from radicalism, whether it be right or left. And of course, in order for that to work, Lucy and Desi had to be sort of depoliticized in the film. So, yeah, I just signed the Communist Party paper because I wanted to please my grandfather. I didn't really believe in any of this stuff or do any of this stuff. But the reality was that Hollywood at that time was swarming with left-wingers. And they were all talking to each other. And they were going to all sorts of events. And, of course, it was a continuum. There were people who were Communist Party members, like Abel Meeropol, my adoptive father, who was a Hollywood writer at that time. And then there were people who were fellow travelers who kind of agreed with it but never joined. And then there were liberals who socialized with the left because there was a big left-liberal coalition, particularly during World War II. And the result is that there was a lot of political involvement, and Lucy and Desi were not, you know, political neophytes. They weren't naive people who were apolitical. They were involved, but of course Sorkin had to play that down because he wanted to separate them from the evil communists.
I just find your conversation really enlightening, because when I had to, of course, like you, we're the same age. I grew up watching, Lucille Ball was a wonderful comedian, and I could remember some of her antics, which were phenomenal. But, you know, when you see the movie, I went to the movies just trying to understand better Lucille Ball's role as a comedian. And I think all of this stuff that you're talking about went over people's head. I do. And you know that I'm politically active, and I missed all that you're telling me. Mm-hmm. And if I missed, a lot of people missed it also, I would assume, right?
Well, I think that's quite possible. I mean, you know, I have the advantage of, if you want to call it that, of being my parents' child and having to deal with their case and having to become, you know, somewhat of a historical expert. I'm not a historian on the McCarthy period because of my personal experiences. And I had to, you know, I was so young during it that by the time I became old enough to really begin to engage politically as a teenager, the McCarthy period was a thing of the past. And so it wasn't in my immediate consciousness. So because I had to study it that much, it doesn't go over my head. But also because I was the adopted child of Abel and Ann Meeropol. Now Abel Meeropol was an English teacher at DeWitt Clinton High School, who in New York City, who wrote a poem which he then set to music called "Strange Fruit," which then Billie Holiday played and made famous, and he became a relatively well-known songwriter. He wrote another very famous song called "The House I Live In" that Frank Sinatra sang, and Paul Robeson sang, and left his job as a high school English teacher because he was scared of being fired because he was a Communist Party member. He went to Hollywood, and he got there just right ahead of the Red Scare, and he was trying to find work and write, you know, for Hollywood. And he interacted with all of these people. He knew them, or a lot of them. So I knew from growing up in Abel and Ann's household that when Lucille Ball said, "Oh, no, I'm not really political. I just signed that because my grandfather wanted me to," you know, they would whisper and say, "Oh, no, that's not really true. She was, you know, she wasn't a communist, but she was sympathetic to left-wing causes and was involved." I got that inside information that other people wouldn't have.
Right.
And one of the things that's interesting to me about that is that how, you know, if you were a leftist and you were called before the House Un-American Activities Committee, I think the left's attitude towards that is, as long as you didn't name others, as long as you didn't rat out other people, any way you wiggled out of it was just fine. Okay? So, you know, yes, the Hollywood 10 people who defied the House Un-American Activities Committee, they were held up as icons, heroic icons of the left. But then there were people like Abel Meeropol. He was called not before the House Un-American Activities Committee, but a New York sourcer of it that was investigating communists in the New York City school system. And when he was called, he just denied that he was a member of the party. He just lied under oath. And he, when asked about other people, he said, as he said to me years later, "Oh, I just developed a worst memory. I just couldn't remember anything." So he kind of wriggled out of it, and that was considered okay, too. People didn't say, "Oh, you know, you lied," or you know, any way you could get out of it was fine as long as you didn't name names. And so Lucy coming up there and saying, "Well, I was just ignorant and naive," the left did not ostracize her. They did not, you know, they gave her a pass because she didn't name any names. And that was kind of the key dividing line of the McCarthy period in Hollywood. So I think that's, you know, that's my inside information from growing up with my family, was they didn't, unlike other people who named names, Abel and Ann Meeropol did never condemn Lucille Ball for pretending to be more naive than she was.
Okay, you said that she didn't name names, and they gave her a pass. Well, Your parents, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, they didn't name any names either, and they paid the ultimate price.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that, and you know, the difference is with, you know, one of the reasons Lucy was given a pass. I mean, there's two kinds of passes. There's the pass that the left would give someone to say, "You're not a traitor to us." But there's also the pass that the mainstream would give to say, "Well, we're not going to blacklist you. We're going to let you continue." And Lucy was given a pass in both ways. She somehow got the best of both worlds. But how did she manage to do that? Well, the difference between my parents and Lucille Ball was Lucy and Desi and their production company, Desilu, was the biggest moneymaker on TV. And
their sponsor,
Philip Morris, they didn't want to lose that. And CBS television didn't want to lose that audience. So they were quite willing to look the other way and figure out some way to give these people. Ultimately, it was really about money, which, of course, is not really fully explained in the film. You know, it makes it out to be, well, the way she got a pass was because she wasn't really a communist. And the reality is the way she got a pass was because she was a cash cow. And money talks. That part, that's another distortion in the film.
So what would you say lesson is for people who are going to see that movie today? What should they learn and say about it?
Well, I think, you know, if you just go and see the movie and the movie is your base of knowledge, and the movie is very effective, you're going to have a really hard time figuring out, you know, if you accept it at face value, then you're going to have a distorted view of reality. But how to cure that? Well, you know, to tell people who are turning on their TV and live streaming a film or going to a movie theater and watching a film that they should read a bunch of books, you know, I think probably if you want to be a responsible moviegoer and you're going to a movie that talks about a historical event, it's probably worthwhile to go online afterwards and to read some reviews and to read, particularly read reviews that are critical of the way the historical event is presented. You know, it could be that you disagree with the critics. It could be that the critics are distorting things rather than the actual film. But at least if you get a range of opinions about it, you won't, you know, you will have a better grasp of the context in which this film is taking place. And I admit that is an imperfect solution, but I think that's the only thing we can do at this point. Because, you know, unlike me, a lot of people going to see this film didn't really live through that period and didn't really experience that period in a way that would give them an insight into the reality of that period.
Wow. So, but point, you were too young to really understand
right.
what was going on, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, I grew up in a household where I heard things about Lucille Ball, you know, in the late 1950s. Remember, the show went on till 1960. I think it was canceled, and I was 13 by then. So, you know, but in terms of learning firsthand about the McCarthy period, the only reason I have such firsthand knowledge is my experience was so intense. It was sort of, you know, etched into my consciousness in a way that it might not be for other people who didn't have that intense of an experience.
Right. So,
and
well,
I want to mention, yes. Okay.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention one thing about the Hollywood 10. You know, one of the things about the Hollywood 10 and the people in Hollywood who were attacked by the House Un-American Activities Committee is that those people really were trying to introduce subtly pro-labor, pro-integration, pro-progressive ideas into the films they were making and the characters who they were creating. And the right wing felt that was culturally extremely dangerous. In the same way that the right wing today sees Hollywood with their promotion of gender fluidity and the rights of people of color and a multi-ethnic support, all of that kind of stuff, people see Hollywood as dangerous in that way today. So there was a real reason that the right wing went after Hollywood, a powerful reason, because it was making cultural statements that they disagreed with and they wanted to suppress.
Wow. So, Robert, our time is up. I always enjoy
mm-hmm.
talking with you. You've been listening to Robert Maripold talking about the Being the Ricardos movie. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Robert. Have a great day. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Cynthia. Thank you.